Hello, this is the Angry GM, and this is a proofread aloud. This is not a live proofread aloud, unfortunately. That's partly due to some time constraints on me, and partly due to the fact that this is not an article I would feel comfortable doing a Q&A on for reasons that will become obvious as I read it. And rather than belaboring the point, I'm just going to get right to the reading and proofreading. And then you can understand for yourself. So here we go. Professor Angry's office hours. I actually do respect people's boundaries. That's a long title. But what can you do? Because I established the Professor Angry's office hours thing as a thing, and I don't need to explain that because I explained it in the long rambling introduction. Hey there, fellow kids. Let's rap. So, every now and then I do one of these Professor Angry's Office Hours things. I know that's a shit name, but it's the best one I could come up with at the time, and now I'm stuck with it. Anyway, these things are basically digressions, expansions, and side deals to my true whatever, whatevery lessons. They're shit you don't really need, but that might help deepen your understanding, or expand the lesson to cover something else. Truth be told, though, I always pictured these things kind of like the day... Whoop, I missed the word like. Truth be told, though, I always pictured these things kind of like the day your college professor came in, sat on his desk, smiled, and said, "Okay, close your books. I want to talk to you all about something. It ain't on the syllabus, but it's important." So, close your books. I want to talk to you all about something important. Twice. We need to have two important talks about shit that's come up in the True Campaign Managery series and some feedback I've received and some conversations I've overheard you having outside of class. And I need to add the word series in there. Originally, I was going to smash the two talks ham-fistedly together, and briefly I thought about separating them into three talks ham-fistedly smashed together, but I don't think that's a good idea. So you're getting two different condescending Gen X... I'm not a boomer, dumbass. Stop it with that shit. Two different condescending Gen X professorial attempts to share hard-earned wisdom with a bunch of dumbasses who haven't outgrown the belief that they know everything. Today's the ugly talk. Tomorrow's actually kind of uplifting. Sweary, but uplifting. On this whole boundaries thing, it ain't a secret that I'm very down on the bullshit trend in modern tabletop role-playing gaming of game masters asking their players to compile lists of upsetting, unsettling, uncomfortable things that It ain't a secret that I'm very down on the bullshit trend in modern tabletop role-playing gaming of game masters asking their players to compile lists of upsetting, unsettling, uncomfortable things that shall not be named by the game master or anyone else during the game to create a safe and inclusive environment. I've taken to referring to this crap collectively as lines and veils horseshit. I admit I'm editorializing a bit. Some of you have politely asked me to explain just why I call all this horseshit and why I seem to be opposed to it on general principle. And I've answered some of you in various places. Some of you have less politely accused me of being an awful person who cares nothing for the safety and the comfort of the players at his table. And some of you have just called me terrible names and gone away forever, and nothing of value was lost. Today I'm going to respond, publicly and finally, on the subject. That is, I'm going to explain exactly why I don't do this shit, why accusations of my evil are unfounded, and why I recommend that you don't do it either. And I ain't interested in opening a debate. If you disagree, do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. My job is to give my readers the best advice I can give, whether they agree or not, and to explain my reasoning so they can make an informed choice. And admittedly, to make fun of everyone who disagrees with me. And to swear. The point is, you're welcome to disagree with me. Quietly. In your head. Don't try to engage me directly. This is my last word on the subject, either except to keep bashing it in little asides in future articles. And if the comments section turns into a dumpster fire, I will eject anyone I have to from the premises and extinguish the blaze however I must. You have been warned. What I mean by lines and veils, horseshit. Let me take you through this. I'm speaking collectively today about a variety of tools that amount to asking players in advance to call out content and ideas that they, the individual players, find so uncomfortable or upsetting that they'd prefer those ideas not come up in the game at all. The stated goal of all such tools is to create an environment in which the players feel safe, an environment in which the players are assured they will not be blindsided by something that might upset them. The trend of using such tools has its roots years ago in the mania for content warnings, colloquially called trigger warnings, and the establishment of so-called safe spaces on college campuses here in America. Initially, the trigger warnings were limited to very serious topics such as self-harm and sexual abuse and represented an effort to protect those who had been traumatized by personal events. The idea expanded in scope and scale and then spread beyond college campuses to basically everywhere, but I only care about pretend elf gaming tables. You see, at some point, somebody suggested that maybe game masters should include content warnings when they run public games at stores and conventions. But eventually, content warnings were deemed insufficient. After all, it's basically impossible to know what sort of content might upset anyone. Sure, there are big, obvious, extreme, common traumas, but what about serious phobias or less obvious traumas? And must this be limited to truly traumatic content? After all, gaming is a hobby, an escape. One shouldn't be surprised by anything that makes one upset or uncomfortable, or anything they just don't want to deal with in their fun downtime. So a new idea was proposed. The veto card, or X card. Players in public game spaces had physical cards they could slap down on the table whenever the game veered into a topic that disturbed them for any reason. Once someone dropped their X card, the game master would stop the scene and move on to something else. No questions asked, no discussion, no disagreement. This was a less than ideal solution. The X card communicated nothing, and the game master was supposed to just respect it and move on without asking questions. So the game master could never be sure what caused the objection, and so the only option was just to stop the scene and move on to the next. But it worked well enough for public convention games, it was just a little clumsy. But in ongoing games, say a campaign open to the public at a game store, game masters had a unique opportunity to tailor their game content in advance to the players. And the same is true for non-public home games. So if a game master could have their players spell out in advance what content they objected to, the game master could ensure the game never got anywhere close to that shit. Various game publishers, in an effort to make sure everyone who played their games was creating a properly safe and inclusive environment, regardless of venue, began weighing in. They included discussions and essays in their core rulebooks and published tools for gathering information about content objections. Monte Cook Games, in particular, became the standard bearer here and published what is acknowledged as the best word on the subject in their free, system-agnostic supplement, Consent in Gaming, which is linked. Today, the most commonly used tool for all this crap is the so-called Lines and Veils survey. It comes in various forms, but all essentially invite players to rate several potentially upsetting topics and to add their own. Thus, before a campaign starts, the players can establish lines, topics that cannot be mentioned in the game at all, and veils, topics that can be mentioned but not described in detail or explicitly played out. That's it. That's my nice, objective, even-handed, non-sweary, non-editorial explanation of these various tools, why they exist, and where they come from. And I even gave you a link to learn more, because I respect people's rights to make up their own minds. But the real Demon Souls begins here. Everything after this is my advice, based on my opinions and my experiences. Take it or leave it. I actually do respect my players' boundaries. Mostly. Let me start by making one thing absolutely fucking clear as crystal. My criticisms of these tools are just that. I'm criticizing the tools. I'm criticizing the idea of gathering lists of verboten topics from your players in advance. I am not in any way criticizing the idea of respecting any human being's personal boundaries. Say Beth's an arachnophobe. Seriously arachnophobic. She has panic attacks at the sight of spiders. Even fake spiders upset her. Even descriptions. And that's bad because I'm really good at upsetting descriptions. Just ask some of my past players about the Bridge of Spiders. They weren't arachnophobes, but they all needed a break, a stiff drink, and a shower when that scene was over. It was fucking hilarious. Okay, this probably ain't helping my case. The point is, Beth's got a spider thing. So she approaches me privately before the game and says, "Angry, I have a spider thing. It's bad. Even descriptions of spiders cause me serious anxiety. Can you, like, watch out for that? Just don't do spiders." I listen to her, and I think of all the wonderful, terrible things I can do with spiders. Like undead spider pinata. See, since spiders are exoskeletal, an animated skeleton spider is basically just a hollow spider. And if the spider died with thousands of eggs waiting to be laid and they all hatched, the skeleton spider would be full of baby spiders. And when it's killed, it splits open and you can use the phrase, literally a carpet of spiders. Sorry, I got distracted again. I really like spiders. Anyway, I listen to Beth and I think of all the great uses for spiders and how much I like them. But then I remember I'm not a giant douche canoe. So I say, "Sure, Beth, thanks for warning me. I don't want to upset you. I'll keep spiders out of the game." But then I say, "Except here's the thing. I'm going to do my best to respect your request, and I definitely won't build encounters around spiders or whatever. But I do a lot of flavor text and narration on the fly, and I often describe things like cobwebs and normal vermin to provide atmosphere. I'll do my best, but if I ever slip and drop spiders, treat it like an accident. And meanwhile, if it happens, just give a polite tap on the table to remind me, and I'll stop. Is that fair?" Beth says, "Yeah, that's totally fair. Thanks." And after she leaves, I put my concept art for the spider whose legs are also spiders in a folder and save it for some other game. Done and done. That's how I do. This shit's a favor. There's a vitally important idea here that always gets lost when discussing this personal boundary shit. The idea is this. Respecting someone's boundaries is a favor you do for someone else. It's a good thing to do, most favors are, but it's still a favor. It's a gift. Why? Because it requires you to change your behavior and monitor your behavior. That takes effort. When you make an effort for someone else, that's a favor, and it must be treated as such. Why is that important? Because favors come with agreements, understanding, an assumption of good faith, and above all, gratitude. I understand Beth's problem, but she's got to understand I ain't perfect and I might slip. She can't lose her shit over that. She's got to assume a slip is just that, a slip, and not an insult or an attack. Of course, I'm a smart guy. I know slips are easy when making behavioral changes, especially when it comes to something awesome like spiders, which is why if I think it's necessary, I'll work out a subtle signal to stop a screw-up. Now, you might think the effort's small enough that this doesn't count as a favor, or that respect for your boundaries is some sort of moral right, an entitlement. Me? I don't think there's any effort so small that it makes a favor not a favor. And while I think respecting boundaries like this is the kind, sensitive, polite thing to do, I also don't think that any human being is entitled to another's behavioral changes. No one is entitled to my behavior. My behavior is my choice. And I assume none of you are big enough dumbasses to try and draw a parallel here between respecting someone's request not to include spiders in a game and some terrible actual crime like assault, right? No one can possibly be stupid enough to say, "Well, not punching someone is also a behavior, but you have a God-given right to not be punched, don't you?" Right? The thing is, there's a cost here. It might be big, it might be little, but it's not zero. If I were some other game master and didn't have 1,001 hilariously terrible uses for spiders, I might not care. I might say, "Sure, Beth, I never use spiders anyway. I kind of hate them myself." So we have to put aside the specifics of this example and acknowledge that Any such requests warrants a behavior change. And just as I, the game master, never know how serious the issue is that someone's asking me to respect, they never know how big a behavioral change that respect might demand of me. We have to take that shit on faith. I assume, thus, that if someone's bringing me such an issue, it's serious enough to warrant a behavioral change. And consequently, they have to assume they're asking me to make a serious effort on their behalf. That's the only way to get to mutual understanding and agreement, and the only way to afford such agreements the proper sense of gratitude. I don't respect every boundary. I said I respect players' boundaries most of the time, so when do I don't? And what does that look like? Honestly, I don't know. This is hypothetical. It's never come up. Partly because I'm actually a pretty friggin' guy, I'm a pretty nice friggin' guy, and I'll punch anyone who says otherwise. And partly because I don't care to include sensitive topics in my games. I mean, sure, there's violence. These are action-adventure games. Violence is a thing. But most anything that earned my game an R or mature rating just doesn't happen. And I don't care to explore sex and romance with my gaming buddies. Those things are between me and my intimate romantic partners. But what if Beth, say, did have a boundary I couldn't skirt? Say she was wholly against violence in any form. She couldn't stand any description of violence. It was okay to roll dice and deal damage and do combat mechanics, but she couldn't suffer flavorful combat descriptions and couldn't stomach the words kill and dead. I'd have to say, I understand what you're saying, Beth, and I respect your views, and I'm grateful to you for being open with me about it. But I just can't run a good game of Dungeons & Dragons under those constraints, and I'm not interested in running another kind of game. I think you'd be best off with a different playgroup playing a different game. Combat is central to the game, and it's something I really enjoy. Something lots of people forget is that respecting, understanding, and agreement aren't the same as acquiescing. I understand hypothetical Beth's issues, and I respect her right to her views, but the only agreement possible is that she's not a good fit for the game I'm running. And I would probably say that even if she was a good friend. I do have good friends I have discovered I can't run games for. Beth and I are too different in this to enjoy playing the same game together. The end. Your boundaries, your problem. Real talk. Everyone's got issues. Everyone's got boundaries. Some are stronger than others. Some are very serious. Some are more like preferences. Some are the result of extreme personal events. Others aren't. Some are self-afflicted, and others are spun out by the cruel twists of fate or luck or happenstance. Many are undeserved and unfair. But everyone's got to find a way to carry their baggage. I will absolutely help a person carry their load if I can, especially if they treat me with respect and courtesy. And I'm glad for the people who help me carry mine. That's part of what being a decent human being is. But it's still on me and no one else to get through my life with my baggage, as it's on everyone else to do the same with their own. It doesn't matter where and how I bought my bags or how heavy they are. If I want to live my life, I have to learn how to carry them. I ain't saying this to be cruel. I'm saying this because life is cruel, sometimes. It's cruel to each and every one of us in turn. And it's easy to forget when we're weighed down by our own luggage that we know nothing about anyone else's burden. That's why we help each other when we can, but also acknowledge anything anyone does for us is a favor. It's a gift. It's treasured. Beth's got a spider thing. That sucks. It makes her life harder for her in ways I can't fathom. All she needs to do to get my help and understanding is ask, politely and courteously and with respect. How surveys ruin everything. So far, I seem totally reasonable, don't I? Even compassionate. Except, of course, for the parts about personal responsibility and gratitude. I know those are nasty, dirty, evil phrases these days. But I'm totally cool with respecting most people's needs, right? At least I'm cool with trying to find a place of mutual respect and understanding whenever possible. So what the hell is my deal with surveys? If I'm willing to respect your issues and I want you to respect mine, what's wrong with just inviting you to write your issues down on a piece of paper and handing it to me? It comes down to four things. Yes, four. That's a lot of things. Surveys ain't agreements. Above, I said this shit about respecting people's limits requires mutual agreement, respect, and understanding. And underlying all of that is trust. Without trust, none of this shit works. The thing is, there's nothing about filling out and collecting surveys that engenders mutual agreement, respect, and understanding. The survey actually intentionally replaces the need for a respectful, trust-building conversation to gain understanding and reach a mutual agreement. As I demonstrated, I'll respect Beth's issues. I'll promise to do my best. But she's got to promise in turn to assume good faith on my part and forgive me if I slip up. And if I think such a slip up is likely, I'll actually build a failsafe we can use to deal with a slip. That's assuming I can honor her wishes and we're not in a we can't play this game together situation. And if we are, Beth deserves to hear that from my own mouth and to decide whether negotiation and compromise are possible. You can't do any of that shit with a survey. A survey is ultimately just a list of demands to be either honored or rejected. Surveys lower the bar. This is going to land me in so much trouble. When you hand people surveys instead of treating boundaries as discussion-worthy issues, that drastically lowers the bar for what counts as a boundary. It's a psychological thing. Players will feel compelled to write something on that survey. If they don't really have any serious issues, they'll dig deep for something. You're also asking players to predict how they will react instead of speaking wholly from their experience with their own past reactions. And that's fraught with uncertainty. The list of things you can imagine, if I force you to, that you might have a difficult reaction to is much, much longer than the list of things you know from experience you will have a difficult reaction to. That's how people be. And so, mixed in with the serious traumas and phobias and anxieties and whatnots, you'll have a bunch of icks and squicks, real and imagined. But so what? Why isn't it worth respecting someone's minor discomfort? Why shouldn't people avoid their icks and squicks during their playtime? Well, that ain't the issue. The issue is when you put the icks and squicks on the same level as legitimate traumas or phobias, you devalue the serious issues. If I can't tell what's an ick and what's a squick and what's a trauma, I have to treat everything with the gravitas of a trauma. But so what? Just assume anything written down is serious enough to respect like a trauma. Well, that's easy to say, but if every one of my five players hands me a list of two or three or four or more issues, now I've got 10 or 20 forbidden topics that may or may not overlap, any one of which may be easy or hard to work around. And I'm just a human fucking being with a human brain. I've only got so much processing power, and just running a game takes a hell of a lot of it. So now I'm set up for failure. I'm eventually going to screw up. If I screw up an ick, no one gets broken. But if I screw up a trauma, I could do someone very serious harm. If I have the power to do very serious harm, I want to treat that as an extremely high priority, which is why, by the way, I want to work out a failsafe or backup plan for when I do screw up if I think that's likely. If I have one or maybe two issues to worry about, I can do it. But I can't do the same for 20 issues. No one can. If you tell me you've got an issue that'll seriously hurt you, I'm going to break myself trying to respect it unless I think it's impossible. And if I think it's impossible, I'll tell you so we can just avoid the situation by not gaming together. So I need my players to bring me only truly serious issues. After all, if something comes up during play that squicks you out, all you have to say is, "Hey, that was squicky. Could you not do that again?" Easy peasy, I'll respect that too. I did it 2 weeks ago when I was going overboard with some undead-related flavor text that proved too much for one player. Surveys imply a promise I can't keep. The fact that these surveys lower the bar so that instead of occasionally having one player bring you a really serious issue, you have five players giving you lists of issues of questionable seriousness, it makes all this shit really unwieldy, and it drastically increases the odds of a slip-up. Replacing a conversation whereby you reach a place of mutual respect and understanding with a pile of surveys basically implies a promise of complete and total compliance while also robbing you of the reassurance that you'll be treated with an assumption of good faith. Yeah, I realize that shit's basically already implied in the above two sections, but it deserves to be set down as a separate issue. Surveys imply a promise of perfect compliance. They promise a completely, totally safe environment. That's a promise you can't actually make, and one that you shouldn't. This shit ain't healthy. I'm not going to harp on this point here. Just as above, where I explained these lines and veils tools and gave you a link, I'm going to spell this out briefly and free of bias and give you a link. There is strong, documented evidence that giving people an implied promise of safety from discomfort, combined with the idea that exposure to discomfort constitutes actual tangible harm, does deep psychological damage to people. It turns them brittle. It renders them delicate and unable to cope with stressors. The absolute best work on this subject is The Coddling of the American Mind by Greg Lukianoff, I have trouble with that name, and Jonathan Haidt. It ain't the only work on the subject, but it's definitely one of the most comprehensive overviews you'll ever find, and it's got hundreds of citations to launch further exploration, and it's linked. Thus, there's very strong evidence to suggest that lines and veils surveys are psychologically and socially unhealthy, and that they actually leave you more likely to hurt people than you would be without them. Now, I'm just a game master and I run pretend elf games. I'm not anyone's doctor, so it's not my place to decide what's healthy and what's not for others. So is it really my place to refuse to let people hand me a survey if that's what it takes to help them feel safe? It's not like I refuse to serve my players pizza if I feel their diets are unhealthy. Well, yes, it is my place, and it's yours too when you're running games. Consider first that I'm the guy who typed, "If you tell me there's an issue, I will break myself helping you if I can." Obviously, I take this shit seriously. I absolutely do not want to traumatize someone with my game. I'm also the guy who insists on setting reasonable expectations and setting up fail-safes to avoid triggering serious issues by accident. The idea of making people more breakable doesn't sit well with me. It actually kind of scares me. See, the people who rely on such surveys to feel safe are a powder keg of conflict waiting for a match. The moment they feel unsafe, even if it's purely by accident, they're going to have an extreme emotional reaction, and it'll be aimed either at me or whichever other player made them feel unsafe. That is what being psychologically brittle means. I am not okay with that. Tabletop role-playing games are social games. I consider myself responsible for the social environment I create. If I set unrealistic expectations and make promises I can't keep, and to understand how lines and veils surveys do that, you'll need to do the homework and read on the subject, I'm being tremendously irresponsible. And given that we're talking about people who may be overcoming serious psychological trauma here, I can't risk being irresponsible. Honestly, running a game on tenterhooks, trying to keep track of a list of things I'm not to say or do, and knowing that if I slip up, I'm not likely to get a courteous and respectful reminder, but instead knowing I'm likely to get screamed at, just ain't my idea of a fun time. And yes, that's where this lines and veils horseshit eventually leads. The end. So that's it. That's my response and my defense and my personal readings for hating this lines and veils horseshit. You can disagree if you want. That's your right, but I ain't interested in further debate. So why am I even talking about this if it's just my personal view of things, and why do I keep digging about it? It's because I've decided, stupidly, to teach tens of thousands of people how to manage a social club, and how to give themselves the best chance to hold a tabletop role-playing game campaign together for as long as possible. I can't, in good conscience, tell you to use Lines and Veils surveys, and I can't ignore the issue given the potential damage they can do. They are the opposite of giving your campaign every chance to succeed. My point is, I'm not trying to make some cultural, political, or moral point. I could, but if I wanted to do that, I'd have said more and different shit than I did. My only goal here is to help you run the least worst game campaign you possibly can. And for the reasons I've outlined above, that comes down to two things. First, ignore anyone telling you to use some kind of gamer consent survey at the start of your game. And second, if a player hands you unbidden a completed gamer consent survey to help them feel safe at your table, run. Just fucking run. And that's it. That's the end of the proofread aloud. And I will be back very soon with another proofread aloud and to wrap up April. By the time you're listening to this, it may be May. Who the hell knows? Anyway, take care, all.